It's Monday the 20th of September 2021. My name's Alex Elliott and you're listening to the Week in Iceland election special. Yes, that's right, it's election week in Iceland and little else in the news these days other than politics. But if you look at it the right way, it's always the case because politics touches our lives in almost every way. The challenge this week, I felt, was to have a conversation about the election and about politics without getting too political. At the same time, I also decided I wanted to invite two expert guests onto the show who don't necessarily get the chance to chat together every day of the week. As a result, I'm very pleased to welcome Johanna Vigdís Hjaltadóttir, who is central to RÚV TV's election coverage, and Heimir Már Pétursson, who performs an equally vital role in the election coverage over at Stöðtvö. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's start with the big question. How do you feel the campaign is panning out this time, especially perhaps in comparison to previous elections?
Well, at this time, this is the third time in a row that we have the election in autumn and not at springtime, so that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And like many others have said, it's looking to be, it's quite short, the period, the election campaign itself. But it's getting more exciting this week. I should say that after summer vacation, middle of August, end of August, it started actually then, just a month ago, less than a month ago. Mm. So it's short, it's snappy, but it's really heavy these days. I mean the advertisement and the campaigns within every party, every of the 9 or 10 parties, should I say.
Yeah, well, thank God, you know, election campaigns in Iceland are usually short. They're like from 4 weeks up to 8 weeks, maybe. It's not like in America where it takes like 2 years or something like that, right. You know. But Johanna says, it's a third time in the autumn or in the fall. That is special. So people are not so tuned maybe into thinking about elections while they're having summer vacation. So after school started, people are home, kids are at school and so on. Then people can maybe start to think about it. But it has been a kind of a few surprises, you know, in what people, the parties are saying in the campaign. And the polls have not at all been surprising, except maybe for the Socialist Party, which is the big surprise.
The reason we have an autumn election is because the two governments ago broke down and they had to call a snap election. Does that mean it's going to be autumn from now on? Because every government wants to hold its full 4 years, presumably. Mm-hmm. And if so, what does the difference that does that make? Because we did have this tradition of spring elections.
Yeah, not necessarily. I mean, in Scandinavia, elections are most usually in the fall. Mm. And Katrin Jakobsdóttir made that point when she decided to have the elections in October, like 1 month before the period was over, wasn't it?
Yes, now end of September, they gave a month away.
Yeah, they gave a month away, but of course many parties wanted to have the elections in the spring. Mm. In Iceland, as you maybe know, the budget is in the fall, but they were working on it from like January, February every year. So for a new government to come in now, they will be inheriting, you know, a budget work that has more or less already been done. Mm-hmm. And not that much you can change in the big picture. Of course, you can move, this amount of money from here to there. But so in that perspective, it is a bit strange to come into government when the government going away has more or less prepared the budget.
But I agree with Heimir. It is not necessarily that we will have traditional fall elections. It is for every government to decide. Mm. But to my opinion, end of September is much better than end of October. I mean, just because of the communications and the weather in Iceland to travel around with the votes. So end of September is better, but it's really difficult for a new government to start parliament and to make something new with the budget role. It is a really a difficult situation. Mm. But, of course, it's, you can do it like they did 2016 and 17. But it was... Yes, we had actually... 2016 was a very... The results of the elections were that way, that we didn't form a government until the middle of January.
Mm-hmm.
And the elections were the end of October.
Yeah, so it was the first time, you know... I think the first time in history of the Republic, at least it doesn't happen very often, that the parliament had to make a budget without any government, so to speak. Of course, the old government was ruling, but they were on pair with everybody else in Althingi, so they had to agree between all of the parties in the budget, because the budget is usually the last thing finished before Christmas. So that was a kind of a strange thing, and I think it actually was a good budget for everybody.
And everybody in Parliament at that moment, this November and December, that 2016, it was rather quiet about the Parliament.
Yeah.
And the elections about the budget were, so to say, without big happenings or big quarrels.
There were no big controversies.
No.
Because the parties just made an agreement in the committees.
So that leads me to ask two questions. First of all, when this election happens on Saturday, there won't be a government after that. They have to create a new one. There'll be negotiations between parties. What happens in the meantime then? Especially because there's been so much big stuff happening, so many decisions that need to be made.
But well,
the sitting government will be an intern government, so they will. But a government like that is not expected to make any big decisions.
Mm-hmm.
How long time it takes to make a former government is the big question. And like the polls have shown, 0.51% of the votes moving from this party to the other one can
make a big difference.
Yeah, it can be crucial for how easy it will be to form a government. Mm. And so that can take 2 months.
Yeah, and, and if you look at the polls now, and also if you see how many haven't decided what to vote, it can be, like we see it on this Monday, if the results of the elections will be something compared with the polls today, then it will be very difficult to form a new government.
Mm.
But, you know, a week is a long time in politics, so, and many people haven't decided what to vote, and people are, very many are in the middle.
Yeah. But still,
cruising,
you know,
around four or five parties.
Yeah, but still, if you look at the polls, you know, the movements are not that big.
No.
It's like 1% going there and there. So it's not like a huge surprise between polls. And that is saying, you know, it is a bit stabilized. Of course, there can be surprises. And there's also an error in the system.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Professor Ólafur Þ. Harðarson isn't tired of mentioning.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And
Every time. Yeah.
And it's like that because you have the system in Iceland is in simple rules like that. You have, 56, there are nine parliament members who come in on so-called extra parliament members. They are divided, there are nine seats divided after the results to make the parties get the seats that they should have.
I was going to ask about this.
And those seats
point.
Are not enough, many enough, because the parties are so many.
Mm.
So, like, Sjálfstæðisflokkurinn and Framsóknarflokkurinn, Independent Party and Central Party, Progressive Party, are getting parliament members they shouldn't have. And they take
especially
it away.
Especially the Progressive Party.
Especially the Progressive Party. And they are taking those parliament members usually away from Samfylkingin, the Social Democrats, and Piratar, and sometimes the rest, but mainly from Samfylkingin.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Can we just explain these equalization seats? What does it mean? Why do they exist? And why is it unfairly biased towards Framsókn?
Well, nobody has had the, what we say, the courage to lead to the end in Parliament that Iceland will be one
constituency.
Yeah, one constituency. We have six parts in Iceland, and that is, like Heimir was explaining, that is what we think is unfair, that we have these nine seats that are jungling around, and it only, in the end, most of the time, we only know it about 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, the day after the election, where those seats will be.
Yeah.
And the Progressive Party has usually had
it is
most.
It is mostly because the Progressive Party and the Independent Party are very strong in the countryside. And that's where they kick more in, the equalizing seats. So they gain more, and the big parties, bigger parties, gain more than smaller ones. So, for example, now the question is, will the People's Party, Flokkur Fólksins, get one parliament member and be under the 5% in the whole over the country?
Mm-hmm.
If they are there, if they are under 5% all over the country, they will not have the right to have an equalizing parliament member. So those seats will go to Sjálfstæðisflokkurinn or the Progressive Party. And it's a horribly complicated thing because of the rule how the seats are calculated. And it's calculated like that. They are divided between the parties. And after, you know, and then who has the biggest percentage to get the next one? And so on and so forth and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But when you come to the equalizing seats with so many parties, there are not enough equalizing seats. So Ólafur Þ. Harðarson and other specialists have been saying either we have to make the equalizing seats, more of them, and take them off the directly elected members, or not take them off the directed members and have more parliament members in general. Mm-hmm. So the equalizing seats used to be 11. And they were taken down to nine in the late 80s or whatever.
Yes, yes,
And
19.
And so
91.
They are meant to give the parties seats in coordination with the percentage of the vote they get. But it gets skewed when you don't have enough seats to do it.
And that won't change until Iceland becomes just one cabinet, just one
constituency.
So, meanwhile, we are stuck with this program.
Yeah, it can be. Ólafur has said it can be changed. But because they were trying to make changes to the electing laws just before they broke off now.
There
were many changes there. They didn't go through all of them. It will probably go through in the next parliament session. But so they didn't have, I don't know, the courage or the air to finish it, to add this one, this thing to it.
Yes, because there has never, until now, or there has never been a majority in parliament to change the system or to take a step further.
And is that because one or more of the parties that benefit most from it are always in power?
Of course it
yes,
is.
Yes, of course. And of course, also because we mean that the parliamentarians from the countryside, they have so great influence in parliament. They have so much power in their hometowns all around the country.
Yeah.
They are always much stronger than the parliamentarians that sit in for Reykjavik, for example.
But still, it's a very strange thing that the majority of parliament members now are from the Reykjavik area, from the Southwest constituency and from Reykjavik North and West, North and South. And so that is also strange. Mm-hmm. It's very strange why the parties didn't, you know, press this.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
And I cannot understand why. In the old days, we used to have the same system as in Britain. You know, just one parliament member in every constituency.
Yeah.
And at that time, the Progressive Party, Framsóknarflokkurinn, gained the most. And they were hugely overrepresented.
Yes,
in parliament.
It didn't matter how many percentage they got. They always won the election.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then, at that period of time, I think it was in the 50s, even Sjálfstæðisflokkurinn saw that this had to change.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the last time a huge change was made.
And I think someday it will change, like Heimir Már was pointing out. We have this new election law that came through Parliament last spring.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of changes there. For example, now you have to point out your party if you want to represent the party for the election. Today you can do it in 2 weeks in advance of the election. And according to the new law, it's 6 weeks.
Yeah.
That's a great change.
Mm. What are some of the arguments against turning the country into one single constituency? I mean, presumably, sorry, the capital city is enormously powerful economically and politically.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon? And if the country was all one constituency, would that perhaps draw away from the power of the voice of people that don't live in the capital? Is that one argument?
That is what people are afraid of, most rural areas would be underrepresented and their interests would not be taken care of. I'm not sure, you know, I don't have a strong opinion on this, but I'm not sure that one constituency is the answer. But you have to change the rules in the way that the people... That the people who are getting the votes are represented in a way. So changes can be made without going all the way to one constituency. And that
is what Ólafur Þ. Harðarson has pointed out.
Yes.
You can change it in this direction.
Yes, even within the system like it is now. But what is happening now, for example, through the decades, for example, the Westfjords have been very powerfully represented in parliament. There have been very colourful members from that area for decades, from all parties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and but strong characters that represent their part of the country.
But I think now it's going to happen maybe for the first time in the history of the Republic that no one will be from there in parliament. Because in the northwest constituency, Akranes, the biggest town, And the west side of the country, not the northwest, has the most power. And somehow in all parties, the members come from there or from the east part of the north.
And the leading person for the left Greens in this part of the country, she lost her first place.
Yeah, in the pre-elections.
In the pre-elections. So she has a second place.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't get elected to parliament... And she's from Westfjords, from Súðavík,
Súðavík.
Súðavík.
Yeah.
And she is a strong character, very strong in representing her home area.
Mm. Yeah, take the Independent Party, both first and second seat in the northwest are both, coming from the same area and close to Blundós and that area.
And also the Progressive Party.
Also for the Progressive Party.
Sjóðagrókur.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Progressive Party, the Prime Minister, Steingrímur Hermannsson, the old Prime Minister, he was originally in that constituency.
Mm-hmm.
So that is it's a change that is happening without, you know, the country becoming one constituency.
Yeah, it happens in the pre-elections.
Yeah. So talking about under-representation, it can happen even though we still have the same system.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on from the system itself to politics and the previous government, because the atmosphere right now is a bit different. We've had this three-party coalition between parties that wouldn't necessarily work together usually. They've lasted the full 4 years. They've gone through COVID. The landscape's very different now. Do you feel that that's affecting the conversation, the debate around this election?
Well, this is the first time that a government of three parties survives through a whole period. I think it's the first time.
Especially with Left Greens and Independence Party together, it's even
a
more.
A whole, that they finish a whole period.
Yeah, well, the...
4 years.
The Progressive Party, the People's Alliance, and the Social Democrats, they survived the whole...
Was it a four-year? I think Ólafur Þ. Harðarson has said that.
Yeah, Borgarflokkurinn came in, you know.
But it's very seldom, for a whole period
of 4 years, yes.
But I think one of the reasons why the election campaign this time started so late, despite of summer vacation, etc., is this COVID period since February 2020.
Mm.
So everything has been turning around COVID, vaccination, everything around that field. So, of course, it will affect. And, of course, the government and the three governmental parties, they are, how do you say it? They are pointing out especially what they have
achieved.
What they have achieved and how well we have survived COVID-19.
Mm. Yeah, but strangely enough, that is not an issue for the elections. You know, when people are asked, nobody gives a shit about it. The people are more occupied by the healthcare system, welfare system, which is a remarkable change in the electorate. People are very occupied with climate change.
Mm. Of course, welfare and healthcare, I think, closely relate to the pandemic, of course, but it's not directly.
No, not at all. People have seen weaknesses in the healthcare system because of the pandemic, but kind of knew beforehand how it was. But the big news is like 20% of the electorates think, climate change is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's over, crossing all parties.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Not just an issue, but they're
one of the main issues.
Priority.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, issues like the COVID. You know, it's like 2% or something in the minds of people.
And you say healthcare and welfare, and of course climate change, and then the elderly, 65 plus.
Yeah, the pension, the pensioners, and the handicap. How the handicapped people.
Yeah.
Are surviving in general. So those issues, more or less social welfare issues, are on the top of the mind of the electorate, and I don't know. We kind of have today, which is strange to say, we have even Sjálfstæðisflokkurinn. Everybody is kind of social democratic.
Mm.
It's very strange, and.
It was interesting to hear Bjarni Benediktsson talking about how the Sjálfstæðisflokkurinn should emphasize taking education and healthcare ministries if they're in the next government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because usually they want the foreign affairs and the finance and
you know.
But during this campaign now we have talked very little about education.
Yeah.
Very little about education, which we usually do more of.
Mm.
And very little about the European Union.
Nothing at all.
Actually nothing at all, even though two parties have on their agenda that we have to finish our application.
Mm. You know.
Yeah, indeed.
Or withdraw, like Miðflokkurinn.
Yeah.
It does seem that perhaps these recent years under Katrín Jakobsdóttir and Iceland's position at the top of the gender equality index perhaps influenced this. This is kind of a more social affairs, a more... personal election than in previous times.
Yeah, and I forgot one issue. Also, the economics are there are four issues that scores like 20%, 20 or over, 20 from 20 to 24%, and the economics are also there,
which is also strange.
Which is also strange because usually the electorate they just want more welfare, but they don't think about the economy.
Economics are really on the top of the list, I would say.
Yeah. So people.
Economics and the economic future in Iceland.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because of the collapse in 2008, people are more aware of that the economy has to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just you cannot just take money constantly out. You have to plan for it. So
and we've taken a lot of money out in the last year and a half.
A lot. And and now you have like many parties standing around the center, and then you have the far left, the Socialist Party, which is, if you listen to what they are saying, are more or less just a communist party, because they have not much in common with even radical social democratic parties. In Scandinavia and Europe. Mm. So they are more or less just, shouting communism, in my mind, from their policies. And then you have Miðflokkurinn, who is, you could call a right-wing party, I would not say a radical right-wing party like the most radical in Europe, but still.
Definitely populist.
Populist, yes. And they are losing the fight. And at the same time, you have this new socialist party, this almost Stalinist party, and it is very strange.
But Miðflokkurinn was founded by the former president of the Progressive Party. So now when he is getting less voters, the Progressive Party is rising.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you think they're going from Miðflokkurinn to Framsóknarflokkurinn?
Many people are going home, yes.
Yeah.
Many people are going home to their old party. Yeah. And that's maybe that's maybe mirrored in the slogan. Wouldn't it just be best to vote for the Progressive Party?
Such a bright and upbeat message, isn't it?
Yeah.
They kind of got it over because it was very, you know, hurtful when Sigmundur Davíð was more or less ousted, you know, out of the party and out of government, out of the chair of the prime minister, and then out of the party. So there were wounds.
Deep wounds.
Now there seems to be healing, and what I understand from the background of the polls is that he is in danger. He might not be voted in his northeast constituency. They might just get one, and that would be in the south.
Yeah.
And
so you mentioned the outlying extremes, if you will, Miðflokkurinn, Sósíalistaflokkurinn. Do you get the impression that the main bigger parties are closer to each other, closer to the middle now than they have been before?
Definitely.
Yeah, so it seems. So it seems.
They do seem to be, there's a lot of overlapping messages.
Yeah, Sjálfstæðisflokkurinn, the independent party, is still the biggest one. And then we have almost the rest in the middle, and then the socialists and the People's Party.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It seemed like that in the beginning, that the socialists were taking votes from the People's Party. But we don't really know.
They are taking from the People's Party. They seem to be taking from left-green some votes and from the Pirates. And they're plucking more or less from all the, social democratic thinking parties. Not from Sjálfstæðisflokkurinn, of course. But Sjálfstæðisflokkurinn, it looks like Sjálfstæðisflokkurinn is going to get his worst outcome in history in these elections.
And interesting that they'll still be biggest, even with their worst.
Yeah, still the biggest. Yeah.
Yes, but Iceland is kind of, I always thought, you know, you have this one party around 20% up to maybe 22-23%, and then all the others stands around 10%. It reminds me of Icelandic history. We still are just clans. You know, of 10% here, 10% there. Yeah. Everybody, if you have an idea, you have an issue to fight for, you think you have to be a chairman of a party to take that issue forward. It's not enough for you to be a member of a party and press the issue there. You have to be number one. You have to be the person taking the limelight. And so this is clan thinking. It's like we thought in the 1200s when Iceland lost its independence. Because the fighting got bloody, so we went under the Norwegian king again.
Well, at least you have to.
I'm not saying you're there.
So this is a really good point. Sorry to interrupt. This is a really good point because we're rapidly running out of time. But this clan thinking and where people fit into the system. Mm-hmm. Can we talk briefly about immigrants, new Icelanders, a lot of whom will be listening to this and don't have the right to vote? Where do we fit into the political scene here? And is there any change on the horizon? Because obviously there has been some discussion in the newspapers this past couple of weeks about maybe the system could be changed for the next election so that people that have lived here for a long time...
But it is actually surprising how little we have talked about immigrants in this election campaign and about the new Icelanders. It has actually been a surprise for me. And also when I listen and read everything that the parties have to offer.
We are now, you know, the Poles living in Iceland is like the size of the population of Akureyri, even more. There are more Poles living in Iceland than live in Akureyri, which is a big number. But as time goes by, we are getting more and more people of foreign origin who are of the second generation, so they can vote. And all of the major parties have had their material in Polish, for example. They don't go all the languages. They don't go to the Tagalog in Philippines or anything like that.
English and Polish.
English and Polish. Yeah. So the Poles are getting to be a very influential population in the voting in Iceland. And I'm sure there are many Poles that can vote today, and there will be more as the generations. Because the Poles are not just the biggest in number. They tend to stay, and they, so they have kids and so on.
Yes, and work and ground families.
But due to being EEA citizens, they're entitled to live here and stay here without becoming citizens, and therefore many won't bother applying for citizenship and therefore cannot vote under the current system.
That's true. They can only vote then in municipal elections.
But I think, for example, in at the roof, we have many articles on our website in Polish just to explain for the Polish voters if they can vote, what is happening, what is going on. But we cannot say where would be the homeland, what would be the best party to vote for.
No, but everybody born here can vote. So Poles born here, or people of Polish origin born here, they can vote when they come to come at age.
From 18 years.
Yeah. So, no, of course, those issues have been, been loud now and then in Parliament and in the city of Reykjavik. And these issues are issues that matters for parties. So if they are, when it comes to making a governmental agreement between parties where those issues will land, I don't know. But it will be very interesting what kind of a government comes out of these elections. If this those three parties, if they get a good majority, I would say 34, 35, then I would bet on the same government again. But also Katrín Jakobsdóttir has to think of her legacy. Does she want to be the left-green party chairwoman who always goes to the independent party for cooperation or coalition? So it's a complicated, very fascinating situation that will be here.
But she has been underlining all the time that they are ready to lead the government, the left-greens.
It is, the word you use there, Hamish, fascinating. It really is. This week is going to be interesting. And, of course, 4 years ago, there was no Rúv English. And this is, therefore, the first Week in Iceland election special. And I think it went rather well. And that's entirely thanks to my guests, Heimir Mál Pétursson and Jóhanna Vigdís Hjaltadóttir. Thank you both for your time today.
Thank you.
Our election coverage continues all week on ruv.as/English and will include comprehensive coverage in text and video on Saturday night as the polls close and the counting gets underway. It will be the first Icelandic election night covered this comprehensively in English, and I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty excited about it. You can follow along on the website and through the Rúv English Facebook page, where your messages and comments will all be read, so do feel free to get involved. In the meantime, if you are an Icelandic citizen, please don't pass up your chance to vote this Saturday. We finished today's show with a song that was not written by political parties during election season, but which almost could have been. This is Take a Chance on Me by ABBA. Bye for now.
If you change your mind,
take a chance,
I'm the first in line. Honey, I'm still free. Take a chance on me. If you need me, let me know. Gonna be around. If you got no place to go when you're feeling down. If you're all alone. Birds have flown, honey, I'm still free. Take a chance on me.